HRNradio.com, where positive people and podcasts unite.
Hi, folks. This is Autism with Dr. Andy, and today's guest, Sarah Carrasco, is the mom of a young man on the spectrum. She's also an advocate, an educational advocate for folks on the spectrum, and she's more than halfway through her first book, which she doesn't have a title yet, but it's a book about what to do when you find that your child is on the spectrum, and it covers everything pretty much from A to Z. So welcome, Sarah Carrasco.
Oh, thanks for having me, Andy.
My pleasure. So, Sarah, listen, before we get into the story about how you got involved because of your child and what you've been doing the last few years as an advocate, let's tell our listeners about you. Let's hear about what your background is, and because that has something to do with the direction you're going. So, tell us about you.
Okay, well, I always wanted to be a teacher, so I have a degree in English with an emphasis in secondary education and a minor in history, so in my state I can teach English or history, in junior high or high school. And I did go to work for Denver Public Schools for 2 years, but my son with autism, it was just really difficult to put him in daycare. So I had to find creative ways to work from home. And one of the things I've done is educational advocacy work. And to be an advocate means basically just knowing the law, special ed law, and the Americans with Disabilities Act. And under the umbrella of the Americans with Disabilities Act is IDEA, the Individuals with Disabilities Education Act. And so I spent a whole summer just poring over law books and special ed law. And it's funny because kind of how I secured my place as an advocate is when my son was in kindergarten. He has severe autism. He's now high-functioning. But in kindergarten, he was going to go to this beautiful school, and they have this wonderful sensory room. And when I went to put him in school the first day of kindergarten, they had moved all of the kids with autism to these old temporary buildings, which was right by a street. And I didn't like it, but I wanted everyone to like me, so I didn't say much, but then after a few months, the kids were almost running in the street, and I had to catch one little boy before he got hit by a car. So I went to the district, and they ignored me, and I went to the principal, and she ignored me. And then I found a statute under IDEA that says you cannot physically separate our kids in different buildings. It's considered segregation. And so I brought them the statute and said, this is not legal. You need to move them back in the building. And they ignored me. And so I said, okay, fine. And I called the news. And a news station came out and did a story on the classroom and just the conditions of the temporary building were not great. And on top of that, they had the kids completely segregated. They didn't go to lunch with regular ed kids. The regular ed kids didn't even know kids with autism were at their school. And so it was, bigger than just the physical separation. And so after we did the news story, they moved the kids back in the building the next day. And then fast forward a couple years later, my son was in a new school because the old school left him on a parked school bus for 3 hours in the cold. And I just said, they're not qualified, they're not trained, he can't be here. And we transferred him to a new school that didn't have a fence, and my son at the time wandered. And wandering is the leading cause of death for people with autism, so I was not okay with that aspect of it, although it was a very good school. and they agreed to put up a fence but didn't put it in writing. So lo and behold, months later, there was no fence. They wouldn't return my emails. And so I went to the news again, and they came and did a story. So we raised the money and had the fence put up ourselves. So after that, I think the district got the message, you know, don't mess with me or I will find a way to level the playing field. So after that, I started doing advocacy work for other families, and I do a mentor program for JFK Partners and also TACA, Talk About Curing Autism. So I've just found creative ways like advocacy and writing to make money so I can stay home with the kids.
Wow, what a wonderful story. And Sarah, how old were you when you made this stuff happen?
Well, let's see. So when David was in kindergarten, I was 28. And then a couple years later, when I went to the news again, I must have been 31.
Okay. The reason I ask is that we have listeners out there who say, well, I can't do this. This is impossible. You've already said something to me that's critical. Right in our opening statements, you said, I wanted everybody to like me, so I didn't say anything. Now, in the evolution of Sarah Carrasco, what we've seen is that you don't care if everybody likes you anymore.
Right.
You care if you like you, and you care if your child gets what he needs.
Yeah.
And so I underline this because most of the people who deal with the school systems are not the fathers. Most are the mothers. And so for the ladies out there who are saying you can't do that, you're going to have the benefit in a couple of months of reading Sarah's story, but also she's doing a help book, hope book, handbook that will assist parents to know exactly what to do from when the diagnosis comes in to what they can do at home to improve the child's well-being and health, and what they can do to assist with the intestinal problems that most kids have, the attention problems, what they can do to assist with school in terms of what's the best way to teach these young people. So Sarah has pretty much done it all. And in her book, which I expect to come out in probably the end of February, you can hear about this, learn about it, I'll have her on the show a week before the book opening. So book kickoff, opening, whatever we might want to call it. So, Sarah, I just needed to say that you have my applause. There you were at 28 years old and making this stuff happen when most folks might have said, oh, I can't do this. And then finally, the proof is in the pudding. Your young man goes from being severely autistic to now high functioning.
Yeah. And, you know, I mean, the purpose of the book is just that, like, to tell parents and explain to parents there is always hope, there is always a way, and, you know, yes, it is stressful and it is hard, but there are also ways to come out of it with your family intact and hopeful and prosperous. It just takes a lot of time. And the purpose of the book is to save parents all of the years I spent researching resources and insurance and education and all of those things, and condense it in the shortest way possible. So I've tried really hard to keep each chapter like 10 to 15 pages. The only long chapter is biomedical, because if you're talking about recovery, there are several steps you have to take. So there was no way to shorten that chapter any more than I did. But the rest of the book is very short and to the point. And if you get a diagnosis, pretty much everything you need to know will be in there. But going back to that, yeah, I mean, I feel like I had a hard time at first because I wanted everyone to like me. and to be my friend. And, you know, my dad always says, you catch more bees with honey, and I always just tried to be nice. But what happens in terms of special education is you deal with people who have not read IDEA. They don't know what special ed law says. So how can they follow it? And then on top of that, you have a lot of ego. They don't want some parent coming in there telling them how to do their job. Even though I said it in the nicest, most diplomatic way possible, I was always met with resistance. And my recommendation for parents, if they're dealing with contentious IEP situations with schools, is there's a book, you know, written in the late 70s, How to Win Friends and Influence People. And that book has helped me a lot. I think you have to know how to talk to people. You have to be diplomatic, you have to stay calm during these meetings, and it's important, but you also have to be tough. You have to have some backbone. And unfortunately, there are times with special education that doesn't apply. It doesn't matter how nice you are, how sweet you are. They're not going to meet your kids' needs if you don't file the right paperwork, if you don't go to the media. And so, you know, in my book, I explain both perspectives. Most schools are great, and you're not going to have contentious situations. But if you do, you know, you have to know the law, and you have to know which paperwork to file. And because it's federal law, it's pretty much the same in every state. So no matter where you are, you can file this paperwork and almost, like, force them into compliance with federal law. So I kind of give both perspectives.
You know, Sarah, because we've chatted before, and you told me a wonderful story about a recent contact you've had with educators for your son.
Yes.
And how you said you required that they do certain things, and that you, and as a result of this requirement, they pretty much complied with involving the whole school. And would you tell us the details on that? I think it's a wonderful story.
Yes. So there's a little bit of a backstory there. So my son was in the last 3 years of elementary school, was in an exceptional, wonderful autism center program. I loved everyone there. The principal was great, the teachers, the aides, everyone was highly trained. It was wonderful, and he was supposed to go from that school to middle school with the kids from his elementary school. That's what we agreed on in the meeting. And then, I mean, and this is the kind of stuff they do. So we spent all summer doing social stories, and this is your new school, this is where you'll go, this is your teacher. And they called me Friday to tell me Monday he would be going to a different school, not the one we agreed on. And at the time, I had a brand new baby. Well, he was, you know, 6 months, but I was still nursing. My dad had just had a major seizure, and my mom had a slight heart attack and stroke. So normally, I would have went and filed a bunch of paperwork and made them put him in the school he was supposed to go to, but just at the time, I couldn't do anything. I, you know, my personal life had taken over. There wasn't much I could do. And so I said, okay, we'll put him in that school. That was a hot mess. It didn't work out. And so then we put him in a different school for eighth grade, which was great. And then now he's in high school, so he's going to be here from 9th till 12th. And I told them, going into this school, I had this special ed director and all of these people from the district, and I said, I just want to be crystal clear. I am done. I am done with you transferring schools. I am done with you not honoring your word. If there is even one incident, we're going to court, and I'm going to ask for private school placement. And he has been through so much, and because I'm an advocate, I can tell you right now the judges in Jefferson County are tired of this school district mistreating people with disabilities. I know they're going to side with me. So I almost want there to be an incident because I want him in private school because I know he'll go to college. So that's kind of where I'm at. And they know I'm serious. If there's anything that goes wrong, I'm going to ask for private school placement. And so I said, if he's going to be at this school, I want every teacher, including regular ed, every administrator, every child in the school to have some form of autism education or training. And the principals agreed, so there's a principal and four assistant principals. It's a big school, and they all went and did the training. All of the teachers have had training, all of the aides. And then I went to a TACA conference, I guess 2 months ago, and I heard all of these stories of kids with autism being bullied, and I came home and I just said, you know, I can't do this. I have to have him in a school where people accept him and at least understand what autism is. So I reached out to the assistant principal and said, you know, look, before I placed him in this school, the district agreed to do autism education for all the kids, and that hasn't happened yet. And it is considered a reasonable accommodation under the Americans with Disabilities Act. So, you know, whatever we need to do to make that happen, let's get it done. And I was prepared to fight them on it. But surprisingly, the assistant principal said, yeah, no problem. We're going to reach out to the Colorado Department of Education and have them come out. So in January, after winter break, all 1,600 kids in the school are going to receive this autism education training. It's like a little video, and then they'll write an essay on something about them that makes them different or their family. And the purpose of it really is because my son and most kids with autism have no physical indicators that they have a disability. They look typical. So when they randomly scream or throw themselves on the floor or flap their hands, from another teenager's perspective, that might look scary. And the more education a person has, the more knowledge they have of a particular disability, the less scary it is. Now they're going to understand why our kids do these things. And I want my son to fit in. I want him to have a good experience. I want him to have friends. And although this might not be the perfect solution, at least we're heading in the right direction. So that's where we're at. They're going to do the autism education class in January, and everyone in the building has had training, including the police officers who work there. So, you know, I think it'll be good.
Well, Sarah, I wanted you to tell that story because, it's to me, it's really powerful. It's really powerful in the sense that a young lady, like, it's kind of like the evolution of Sarah Carrasco. First wanting everyone to like you, then realizing for your son to get what he needs, that can't happen. You got to do what you have to do. And now to the point where people, having dealt with you, realize that you're going to get what's fair and equitable under the law.
Right.
And if they want to give you a hard time, then they're going to have to deal with it. And
right.
I underline this, Sarah, because there are so many people out there in our listening audience who need to hear this. You know, and as a matter of fact, when your book is available in February, what's going to be nice is they're going to hear how to do it step by step, and they'll also have your story. And also know educationally what to expect, what you can do, what they should be teaching in the classes. And I just think it's wonderful that having a severely child born to you, and then so many years later to be saying to me on the show here, and that I expect to be going to college. I mean, how wonderful is that? To me, that's nothing short of miraculous. And it's all testimony to your knowledge, skill, ability, and most of all, perseverance and time put in to learn what you had to learn. Sarah, we have to take a short commercial break. And when we come back, I'd like to talk about the various chapters in your book. We have three 8-minute segments coming up, so we'll be able to touch upon some really cool stuff. So we'll be right back, folks.
HealthyLife.net, the positive radio network.
Hi, folks. This is Autism with Dr. Andy. Today's guest, Sarah Carrasco, has a son on the spectrum who was early identified as severe autism. Now he's very high-functioning. She expects him to go to college. This is her story. The story is Sarah Carrasco and what has brought her son to where he is. So welcome back, Sarah.
Oh, thanks. Yeah. So before the break, you used a word that I've kind of clung to all of these years, and, you know, you said miracle. And in my mind, it is sort of a miracle to watch my son progress, and it seems like every week he gets a little bit better. Every week there's more language or another milestone made at school. And it is like witnessing a miracle. The difference is that in order for us to get our kids better, there are steps we have to take. And so that is sort of the purpose of the book. I really do have a big heart for people with autism and their families, and I just feel terrible that I can't get this information to them. You know, to everyone. And so the only way I really can do this is with a book that they can access easily for not a ton of money. And, you know, one of the steps you have to take to get your child better is, you know, biomedical interventions. And so what that means is treating the child's autism where they are. You're not just treating the blanket diagnosis of autism. So one kid might have GI issues and heavy metal toxicity, while another kid has neither of those problems. They might have, you know, Rett's, and they might have some physical delays, and they need a physical therapist and an OT. So the book is sort of a guide to wherever your child is on the spectrum, you can help, and then if I give you a recommendation for therapy, I also give you a way with insurance or Medicaid or waivers to get it funded. So I basically wrote the book that I was looking for all these years. So other parents can have the success I have had, which is having a child with literally worst case scenario for autism to now he's by far my best behaved child. I have three boys. And, you know, he's always good, he's kind, he's nice, he's wonderful. And in the early days, I don't know that any professional thought that was possible. I was told to institutionalize him when he was four. And, you know, it's all about hope and believing that things can improve and things can get better, and they will. I just think parents need a bit of a guide and some resources to make that happen.
Yeah, you know, Sarah, in one of our previous conversations, we had talked about how, as an advocate, so many people are calling you, and you're saying basically the same thing over and over and over, and it's so time-consuming that you thought it would be great to do a book that could be done as an e-book, because if they buy the regular book, it's usually most books like this run around $18 to $20, but the e-book could be probably done for $3. So even people who are having a hard time financially will be able to afford this book and download it to a Nook or a Kindle. So I think this is a really big deal, because it's going to allow the world to know Sarah Carrasco, and also to benefit by your knowledge and experience, where, you know, if they tried to have somebody like you, it would cost hundreds, if not thousands of dollars to to get this benefit. So I'm just delighted that you're doing this book. And let's talk a little bit more about something that you just touched on. When you find out the child is on the spectrum, tell our listeners some of the ways you can find out whether or not they have intestinal issues, or whether it's lead, or whether it's any one of a number of things that can be causal factors. And how do you determine that?
Well, there are physical indications. So, you know, as a parent, you have to prioritize what you're going to test for. And so it's growth, but one of the ways you know if your child is not absorbing vitamins and minerals properly is in their poop. So it's growth, but us autism moms talk about this all the time. So normal poo is like brown and formed. If a child has constant diarrhea, they're not absorbing minerals and vitamins properly. If it's green, you know that they're not really absorbing anything, and it, without proper nutrients, you have brain development issues. So that is a physical indicator that you need to address gut health. So you would do that by testing for overactive yeast and bacteria in the gut. And then, you know, follow whatever the doctor's recommendations are. It could be probiotics. It could be a prescription. It can be addressed in a number of ways.
Sarah, let me interact just a second, interfere, actually, is that when you go to a doctor, say your pediatrician, mm-hmm. what would you say to him or her in terms of how you want the an analysis of gut material? What would you say?
Well, here's where it gets tricky, and parents need to learn to be politicians. You know, politicians can say anything to your face, and it's very convincing, and you believe it. It's almost an art. And so with doctors, you have to remember there's a bit, some of them have a God complex thing going on. So if you go in there and say, I want this, this, and this done because I think this is wrong, they're probably not going to listen. If you go at it and make them think it's their idea and say, oh, guess what? He has diarrhea all the time. His poo isn't formed. What do you think? How do you think we should test for this? And they're going to say, well, we should look at possibly overactive yeast or bacteria. Or just present it in a way that it's for the benefit of the child, not that you have done so much research, you now know more than they do, which in most cases is true. Most pediatricians have almost no background in autism. They get about 3 hours of autism education in medical school, which is nothing. So they really don't know what the physical symptoms are. So I always present it in a way that this is just for the benefit of the child. It's not that I know more than you, because then you're dealing with egos, and that never goes well. The other issue is, you know, if your pediatrician isn't on board and isn't willing to work with you, then that is not the right pediatrician for you. And, you know, not everyone's going to like you. Maybe you have to switch pediatricians, or maybe try a MAPS doctor at medmaps.com or .org. You can find the right doctor for your child.
Yeah. Sarah, we have to take a short commercial break. When we come back, I want to talk more about this, because I really like your style, because what you're doing is saying just don't say A, B, and C, but you're giving the reasons why it might be best to say A, B, and C in a certain way. So
right.
It sounds great. We'll be right back, folks.
Where positive people and radio unite. HealthyLife.net.
Hi, folks. This is Autism with Dr. Andy. Today's guest, Sarah Carrasco, is the mom of a young man on the spectrum who has improved almost miraculously to where was severely involved to now ready to go to college and high functioning. And this is kind of Sarah's story of how she has evolved as a person, as a mother, and as an advocate. So welcome back, Sarah.
Oh, thanks, Andy.
Sure. So, Sarah, let's talk about some of the things you were just mentioning. And that one item alone, just to remember that doctors don't know much about autism. They're really not taught much about it.
Right.
And the other thing, too, that I'm finding is that in most medical schools, very little time is spent on vaccines, which is a whole other topic. And, you know, vaccinations are a very controversial subject. And so do you talk about vaccines at all in your book?
I do. So I have, you know, there's 10 chapters in the book. So the first one is for parents to take care of themselves, which is the first priority. We have to take care of ourselves or we're not going to be able to take care of our kids properly. And, you know, the best analogy is if you're on an airplane, the flight attendant says, if there's a problem, you put your own oxygen mask on first and then you put your child's on. So we have to take care of ourselves if we think we can do a reasonably good job of taking care of our kids. And it's hard, and I can't say I'm great at always putting myself first, but at least now I remember, you know, I have to take a break and go to lunch with my girlfriend, and I have to take a couple hours and go get my hair done just so I can have some time to relax and regroup. But I do get into vaccines a little bit. I have a chapter on biomedical interventions. And so if we're talking about recovery from autism, we have to talk about vaccines. And how a child recovers is, in a nutshell, you are looking at vaccine ingredients and what those side effects are and reversing the side effects of that particular ingredient. So as an example, what was known as Mad Hatter's disease, that's the real disorder, it was from hat makers would use mercury to line hats and to form them. And a lot of them came down with what they called Mad Hatter's disease, which is heavy metal poisoning. Well, what does heavy metal poisoning look like? It looks like social withdrawal. There would be a lot of stimming, like hand flapping and unusual physical movements, headaches, a loss of language, a loss of social skills. And it looks very similar to autism. And so if you have those physical symptoms, the head banging, the loss of language, that kind of thing, there's a physical indication that you may need to test for heavy metals, which is an ingredient in many vaccines. They say they took it out, but really they didn't. They just put it in the flu shot that they give to pregnant women. And there are trace amounts of heavy metals in plenty of vaccines still. And so to determine if your child has heavy metal toxicity, you have to do chelation. And chelation is a Latin word for unlock. So you're just unlocking the heavy metals, which bind themselves intracellularly. So it's inside of a cell. You have to do chelation to provoke it out and test the child's body for heavy metal toxicity and then treat it accordingly. If it's severe, you know, you're going to start chelation right away, and it's intense. My son, for example, we did the hair test for heavy metals. It came back negative because metals have a short life in the body. When we did the chelator, my son had heavy metal poisoning. It was far beyond toxicity. It was shutting down his liver and kidneys. So had I not done it that day and, you know, probably that week, my son wouldn't be here. So it's critical that we look at heavy metals. The other thing that vaccine ingredients can do are create an autoimmune response. And so that's why we have so many autoimmune issues in children now, like allergies and asthma and that kind of thing. And so the biomedical chapter just gives you a roadmap, like how do you know what needs to be tested for? And once you know, how do you treat it? in a cost-effective manner. You know, I have done this with almost no money and not a ton of support, to be honest, and my son is almost better. So I think there's always a way, even if you're poor, to make it happen. And so I provide parents with also resources to try and help them fund it, because it can be costly.
So, Sarah, you have a whole chapter on biomedical interventions. Can you
Right.
give us some other examples?
Of chapters?
No, on biomedical.
Okay, so the chapter on biomedical talks about all of the different interventions. So one is the gluten-free, casein-free, soy-free diet. One is chelation, methyl B12, vitamins, supplements. So I break down the major biomedical interventions and why we do them and why it works. But then within the biomedical chapter, I have a section on things you should know before you vaccinate. And that's one of the things I address is, you know, doctors go to school for a long time. They have a ton of clinical hours. When you look at their textbooks, their medical textbooks, there is one paragraph in one of their books about vaccines, and then there is a four-page chapter in one of their books, I think it's the physiology one, on vaccines. So doctors have read about 4.5 pages on vaccines, and yet it is a huge part of their practice. It is a huge part of the money they make. Doctors get paid a heck of a lot more if most of their patients are fully vaccinated. It's how they get their bonuses. And I don't think people realize that going into it. And if I've been researching vaccine ingredients for 10 years and this person has read about 4 pages on it, we're not on the same playing field. And at this point, when doctors ask me, oh, is your child caught up on vaccines? My answer is no. And I say it with conviction, so they typically don't bother me. But when they do, I have never met one doctor who can even hold a conversation with me on vaccines. They don't read the vaccine package insert. They don't know the ingredients. They don't understand synergy. So when you're combining aluminum, thimerosal, formaldehyde, acetone, in one visit, what is the synergy? What do those things do in combination? The reality is pediatricians don't know. They can't answer those questions. And they get mad and they storm off. Or they say, oh, yeah, I should try to look into that a little bit more. But the reality is they know very little about that. So I do touch on that in the biomedical section. And I do talk about, you know, vaccines. If a person is diehard, they love vaccines, they want to do it, okay, fine, but just please don't give your child acetaminophen before or after a vaccine, because acetaminophen depletes glutathione, and without glutathione, your body literally cannot detox. And so all of the toxic ingredients in vaccines, like, you know, like I said, polysorbate 80, formaldehyde, acetone, all of these terrible things are retained by the body if you introduce acetaminophen at the time of vaccination. So if you want to vaccinate, okay, fine. Just don't do it when they're sick, and don't give them acetaminophen before or after. So I address all of those things in that chapter.
Well, listen, I can't wait to read this book, and I definitely want a signed copy. So I can show
Well, I'm glad you want to read it.
So, great. And, Sarah, we have to take a short commercial break. We'll be right back. We're going to talk about more of your chapters and then more of your enlightening information. We'll be right back.
Radio Your Way. HealthyLife.net.
Hi, folks. This is Autism with Dr. Andy. Today's guest, Sarah Carrasco, is the mom of a young man born on the spectrum who is now doing very, very well, getting ready to go to college. She was a soon-to-be author She's a child and educational advocate. Welcome back, Sarah.
Thanks. Well, Sarah, go ahead.
You lead.
So just to clarify, buddy, so when you say he was born on the spectrum, I know you didn't mean to say that, because in our particular case, my son had a full-blown regression into autism. He was developing fine until 13 months when he got his 12-month MMR. We got it late. And before that, he knew his alphabet. He knew five words. He was doing great. And he regressed into autism after vaccines. And his pediatrician, years later, acknowledged it, which that's an intense story in and of itself. But in our case, we know it was vaccines that triggered his autism, and the it's an old insert, but the Tripedia vaccine package insert on page 11 lists autism as an adverse reaction. And so when people say, well, the science is settled, yeah, it is settled. We're very clear that it can trigger autism, because it's even in the vaccine package insert that comes with the Tripedia vaccine. So I think the crutch has always been, oh, they're conspiracy theorists and they're crazy, because no one listens to a crazy person, right? So let's just say it wasn't us that came up with that. It was the manufacturer themselves. So in our particular case, my son's autism was triggered by vaccines.
You know, Sarah, I'm so glad I made that mistake, because it gave, I did not know that your son was vaccine injured. So in your correcting me, which I appreciate very much, you you really told our listeners quite a bit, in that he was okay until the vaccines came around. And, you know, I've heard this over and over, and again, most of us are not anti-vax, but most of us, what we are is vaccination with in truth, knowing what's going on, making sure that folks don't get multiple vaccines at the same time, spreading the vaccines out so that they're not given while the child's still tiny. I mean, there's a whole list of things, but you made another point that to me was such a big deal. In my speaking with folks over the years now, to my knowledge, there hasn't been any study that says, how does vaccine A interact with vaccine B, C, D, D, F, and so forth? And they don't know.
Now, yeah, they don't know.
I was going to ask your opinion, and you just clarified it. They don't know, and yet we're giving to our most precious thing in the world, our children, we're giving vaccines that they don't know how A interacts with D, E, or F, or anything. And so this to me is just, it's scary. And it's not only scary, it's something that needs to be addressed. And, you know, Dr. Stephanie Seneff, as you know, has now said that by, I believe it's 2035, every other kid will be born on the spectrum. And of course, more boys than girls. So something has to be done. And, and I think that your books and books like it are setting the foundation for all we want is truth. We're not anti-vaccines, you know. Vaccines have saved lives, we know that. But to go before the vaccine court was established in around 86, you know, there were maybe 8 to 10 shots given by the time a kid was 6, and now it's around 32 doses by the time the child is 2. And would you agree with those numbers? That's close to what's given?
Well, before manufacturers were exempted from liability, so now you can't sue them. So even though I can prove it in court, I can't sue anyone. It was 20 vaccines by age 18, and now that they have no liability, it's 72 by age 18, and they're about to add several more. So they're never going to stop adding vaccines, because it's a huge money maker, and there is zero liability. So if your child injured, taxpayers pay you back, not manufacturers. So we've basically given a corporation.
Sarah, explain to me also, you said that there's a bonus given if pediatricians have most of their kids on schedule.
Right.
Explain that to our listeners.
Well, every insurance company approaches it differently, but like Blue Cross and Blue Shield, for example, stipulates that for pediatricians, I think it's 67%, something like that, close to 70% of their patients need to be fully vaccinated on schedule to get 100% of their bonus, which is, you know, maybe about $400 per child per round of vaccine. So it ends up being a ton of money for pediatricians. So I think there is, you know, a financial incentive for them to do this. And,
Sarah,
and doctors are lied to. They're being lied to. They're told they're safe and they're not. And I think maybe in the future we could do, you know, another book just from parents' perspective. What did your child look like before they were vaccinated and what happened afterward? Because this book is really just about autism. So I only have one section on vaccines, but it is something we need to continue the conversation on. There is a problem there.
Sarah, I wish we had another hour because we're just beginning to really touch on, we only touched on one or two of the chapters, and I know there are 10. So I'm going to have you back after a book launch. And,
okay.
And let's really meet again as folks will be able to get it as a soft cover and also as an ebook. And Sarah, I thank you so much for spending the time with me and helping our listeners. And I applaud your work. I think you are a very important person in the field of autism, and you're enlightening people and you're helping people. And most of all, you're making a difference. So, again, you have my applause.
Oh, well, thanks. That's all I really want to do is help these kids and their parents and feel like I've made some difference in the world, you know?
Well, it's already happened and will happen even more as you progress and your book comes out. So, Merry Christmas, and thanks for being with us.